NFL free agency is well underway, and there have been several signings that will alter how we look at the 2024 NFL draft. We're going to chat about that and the draft itself and all things Detroit Lions with our guest Jeff Risden tonight, coming up next on the Draft Countdown Podcast. Welcome to tonight's edition of the Draft Countdown Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Bosar, joined as always by my co-host, Shane P. Hallam. Shane, we are 42 days, 22 hours, 58 minutes, and 19 seconds away from the 2024 NFL Draft.
Yeah, well, free agency has begun and is close to ending pretty soon is how quick this goes with that legal tampering period. So I'm excited to get into it with you and how the draft has definitely changed and team needs are on the mend here.
Yeah, definitely has been altered, and we're going to kind of talk about that a little bit later in the show for sure. But just a reminder right now, if you're watching live on YouTube and you have a question, drop it in the chat. We're going to answer a few of them there. Or if you're following along on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, send a question to @DraftCountdown. We've already got a couple of them over there. And if you're a member of our Discord, you're more than welcome to ask a question there. Go to the podcast section, drop a question, we will answer it later on at the end of the show. And if you're not a member of our Discord, go to draftcountdown.com, type right top right hand corner of the search bar, there is a link to join. We've got a few questions in there as well tonight, Shane, so plenty of questions to get answered at the end of the show. So we've had a significant number of trades. Last week we were tongue-in-cheek talking about the one trade between the Bears and Bills, but we have had significant draft capital, well, maybe not significant draft capital, but we have had significant names hit the ground running. So we'll start with the first one that happened after we left. Jerry Jeudy, who seemingly has been on the trade market now for about two seasons, finally on the move. He's headed from Denver to Cleveland. The Browns will give up a 2024 fifth and sixth round pick.
That's not much. You know, I think maybe – you and I remember Jerry Jeudy as a prospect. He was my top receiver in that class, right there with CeeDee Lamb. And he has been a bust. So Cleveland's basically getting him for nothing. I don't think it guarantees him much, but does fill, you know, a hole for the Browns at receiver.
Yep. Their second, basically, former Alabama wide receiver they picked up for a bag of balls here in the last two seasons with Amari Cooper coming over from Dallas as well. I guess we can close the book on Mac Jones as a starting quarterback for now, at least in the NFL, as he has been traded from New England to Jacksonville, where he'll back up Trevor Lawrence. Jacksonville gives up a 24-6.
I wonder if there's anyone out there that said before the 2021 draft that one day Mac Jones will back up Trevor Lawrence. In three years. You know, you've been called nuts for that.
Probably not. I remember, was it the San Francisco was the art, was Trey Lance or Mac Jones? Well,
yeah. It would have been interesting to see how Trey Lance and Mac Jones's careers would have differed had they taken Jones instead of Lance.
One trade we're going to save and talk with our guest Jeff Risden later because it involves the Lions. So we'll hold that one till then. But I guess the biggest trade here was Carolina moving on from Brian Burns.
trading him to the New York Giants, where he signed a 5-year extension for $150 million, 87 guaranteed. Carolina picks up a 24 second and fifth, and that second round pick is pick 39, I believe. So a high second round pick and a fifth round pick going to the Panthers for Brian Burns.
I think it's a good deal for both sides. I mean, the Panthers obviously should have traded Burns a year ago. They would have gotten a much, much bigger return had that been the case, including multiple first-round picks. And, you missed the boat on that. But for the Giants, you get another – you get an elite pass rusher on the other side of Kayvon Thibodeau. And it's pretty much the pick that they acquired last year, right? So it's not like the Giants are really giving up any significant draft capital here. So I like it for them.
Yeah, no doubt. I like that pairing with him and Thibodeau there in New York. Your team involved in a trade this week where we do a player and a pick swap here where and it also involves the Carolina Panthers. The Carolina Panthers will acquire former Pittsburgh receiver Deontay Johnson and a 2024 sixth round pick. Pittsburgh gets cornerback Dante Jackson and a 24 seventh round pick. Explain this one, Shane.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, the Steelers weren't going to re-sign Deontay Johnson. This was going to be his last year. So either you move him now or he's a free agent anyway. And he was a bit of a malcontent last year. I like Deontay Johnson. He's a good player. But that was part of the issue. And you get the move up from the seventh to the sixth round, which is about 60 picks or so for the Steelers to move up. And they add speed. Dante Jackson to the defense, signed Patrick Queen, also adding speed to that defense. I think that's kind of the goal. For the Panthers, I think it's a great move. You're helping Bryce Young. Dante Jackson's contract was too big for you to really keep anyway. So ultimately for the Panthers, I think this is a win for them as well.
Yeah, I don't expect that to limit Pittsburgh going into the draft for a corner, though.
No, but I think it lessens it on the priority list. Now receiver becomes a much bigger priority in the draft.
All right, we're going to pick back up. We got like three more trades to talk about. We'll pick that back up after we bring in our guest here. He is the editor of DraftWire for the USA Today group of wire services there. And he's also the editor for Lions Wire. So, we're going to talk about Detroit Lions with our good friend. He is Jeff Risden. Jeff, man, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. This is actually the 1-year anniversary of me taking over DraftWire. So it's good timing to have me on. So always good to be with you.
And the content has gotten better at the DraftWire since Jeff Risden has taken over. Let me say that. All right, so Jeff, we were talking trade, so we'll come right out of the chute with this one. Lions involved in a trade this week, acquiring Carlton Davis over from Tampa Bay, and they get a sixth this year and a sixth next year, and give up the third this year going to Tampa Bay. What about this trade? Do you like, dislike, or are you indifferent?
I like it a lot. The Lions' biggest need on defense is outside cornerback. They just got a really good one. He was a little bit of a misfit in Tampa. They played way too much zone for what he's good at. He's a man-to-man, aggressive, in-your-face, I'm going to pop you with the line, and I'm going to control your release type of man cover guy. It's exactly what Detroit wants. Tampa didn't use that. Good player, bad spot. It happens a lot in the NFL. That's why I think there should be more trades. And the fact that they gave back two picks in six-round picks, obviously, but that's interesting to me because that almost makes it seem like it was more of Tampa trying to get rid of him actively. Like, we're almost paying you – like obviously, the third-round pick, and by the way, it's number 92, which is the 91st selection because Miami got whacked for, tampering, but – we have to keep with the numbering system up. Otherwise, I go crazy because I can't ever keep track of it. But I digress. I think it's I'm very happy as a Lions fan for it. If I'm a Buccaneers fan, I'm thinking, okay, Jamel Dean better step up, and that third round pick or something better than that had better be going towards a cornerback to replace him, because they don't have that right now. And that's kind of a need. You can never have too many good cornerbacks. Detroit proved that last year when they started Kendall Vildor, who might not start in the UFL in playoff games because everybody else either got hurt or sucked. And that's why they needed a move like this so badly.
Was there any truth to them being interested in bringing in Marshawn Lattimore from New Orleans?
I don't know that. It certainly makes sense. Dan Campbell, Aaron Glenn, the head coach and defensive coordinator, respectively, coached him in New Orleans. He's probably available. I think it's probably the nice way to say it. You'd probably know that better than I would. I think he probably is available. I don't know if they're in that. I think the Saints would want more than what Davis coaxed in return. So maybe, but I know they were interested in Greg Newsome. I shouldn't say it. I know they talked to the Browns about Greg Newsome's availability. I don't know the extent of those conversations, but I do know they talked. I can even tell you who talked and when they talked, but that clearly didn't go anywhere. And they are very strongly linked to Legarius Sneed still. I don't know how much I'd buy that anymore, but if you want to spend your second round pick on Legarius Sneed, yeah, give me, please.
Well, let's talk about some of the other signings the Lions did. They've been beefing up this defense. Amik Robertson, another mm-hmm. corner from the Las Vegas Raiders, who has had a lot of early success and still pretty young. And Marcus Davenport, big defensive line signing. How do you feel about those? How are those fits with the Lions and what they needed?
So for me, Davenport is a reclamation project flyer, and they're actually paying him a little bit more than I would pay for that, but maybe other teams were interested in doing that. Look, he went to Minnesota last year and did not play well, and then he got hurt. And he had one really nice season in New Orleans where he cleaned up a whole lot of pressures that Cam Jordan created, and the rest of the time he was either hurt or not quite achieving there. So it's a former first-round pick. He's physically talented. He fits their athletic profile that they want. They like big dudes who can set an edge and then rush the passer secondarily, especially on that side opposite Aiden Hutchinson. So it's worthwhile. It's more than I would pay, but you know, I'm not going to quibble about it. They lost. So this offseason, they got rid of both Romeo and Julian Okora and Charles Harris. So there's a lot of roster space there. So it's not like they're not going to take somebody just because they signed Marcus Davenport. So in that sense, I'm okay with it. I love Amik Robertson. Brian knows this. I am a sucker for plucky corners, small guys. I love them. They are my weakness. And he is short, not small. He's 5'9 in cleats, probably 190 pounds. But the fight to size of dog ratio in that dude is off the freaking charts. And I love that. He's an outside corner who's 5'8. So you got to have some edge to you. He's a very good tackler. He's a very good leaper. If you watched him play against the Packers, you'll see that he thieved a pass from Christian Watson, who's like 7 inches taller and 30 pounds heavier than him. He outleaped him for that. Like, I pointed it above him. So there's a lot of things to like about that. I'm not sure that the Raiders were the most conducive environment for anybody to succeed, but I'm very happy about that. So that, you know, between that and Davis coming in, they've definitely upgraded the secondary and the corners specifically. That's where they needed to go. So I'm happy with that.
What's up with Louisiana Tech just producing these rock solid undersized corners? It's wild to me.
It's what they do.
So Jeff, we've talked about the present. We're going to talk about the future of the Lions in a little bit. But let's talk a little bit about the past here. You're a longtime Lions fan. You got that close, man, to the promised land. How did it feel to get there and then just fall and just, I don't want to call it a collapse, but the second half of the NFC Championship game, not ideal.
That was unpleasant. That was a frustrating time because I think what made it really frustrating was that they were so damn good in the first half. My God. Like I'm in there. So I'm a co-host of the Detroit Lions podcast, and we're watching that it together in my hotel room in Mobile. We're getting ready for the Senior Bowl week. And I'm like, do we order Super Bowl like plane tickets now? Like, do we book our travel now? We're like, well, we'll hold off on that. And probably a good thing we did, because that was rough. But I will say, I was alive and I was an adult, actually, the first time that they won a playoff game, which was in 1991, then after the 91 season. That was their only previous win in a postseason game in the Super Bowl era. I didn't get to watch that game. I was in college at the time. I was working that day, and I didn't get to see it. And I've never seen it, like, uninterrupted. So I had never tasted Detroit Lions playoff victory. I'm over 50 years old. I'm like, So from that standpoint, that first game, that was unreal. It was one of those – it was like a communal experience, too, because so many of us have been suffering for so long. And the fact that they got it done, and the fact that they got it done against Matthew Stafford was not insignificant either. But that was just laying on the floor, crying, like tears coming out of my eyes, but I couldn't make any noise. I'm just like, I didn't know what to do. And I hope to get that feeling again soon.
It's wild how, as a Bengals fan and you as a Lion, how those two fan bases are so similar and what they've been through in life. And like you said, that's the only game I've ever been to in Cincinnati was their wild card win over the Raiders, ending the 31-year snide. And just it's so wild. Shane, let's get us back on track here. What do you got for Jeff?
Yeah, let's get into the draft, Jeff, and right. You know, you've been going through the process, obviously, with a Lions perspective here. You know, what do you think their approach is going to be to this draft? What has been kind of, now we have some historical data for what Brad Holmes likes to do. You know, what type of players do they like? What do they value? And how do you think that plays out in this draft?
Yeah, so last year threw a lot of curveballs at a lot of people because, just as an example, Brad Holmes in his time in Los Angeles and in Detroit had never even considered a first-round linebacker before, and they took Jack Campbell at 18. They took a running back at 12. Some of us knew they were pretty high on Jahmyr Gibbs, and we also knew that DeAndre Swift was not long for Detroit. So that wasn't, like, totally shocking, but the first-round linebacker was pretty darn shocking. So we're kind of open to anything, you know? They tend to value grit. If you've watched the Dan Campbell press conference, you know what he's all about. But they want people who live, breathe, die football. They're going to give you every ounce of their being between the white lines. They're going to practice as hard as they can. They're going to be smart football players. So they're not... This is not a team where you're going to have to, you know, like, explain the overtime rules to anybody on the team in the playoffs. Like, they're going to know it when they walk out that coin flip. They are going to be players that want to be coached and want to get better. Their team emphasis as a coaching staff is on player development. So they value the draft. They value guys that have upside, athletic upside, and also, like, maybe, I don't know, maybe they just weren't in the right situation in college. And they find that in the pros. So they're looking at that. The athleticism does matter. Length, not so much at cornerback or defensive end, especially arm length, like Aiden Hutchinson. You know, people used to make the memes of him with T-Rex arms. Well, now they're laughing, huh? So athletic profiles, they tend, if you want to refer to Kent Platt's Math Bombs RAS, they tend to get guys over 7. They like guys that are even higher than that. But one defining trait, they are not a team that looks at 40 times. They are very invested in the GPS timed. You guys know this from working with Trapka. Like, that information is sometimes hard to get, and it's not always reliable when you get it. So you got to be a little bit careful with what you see on that. But that's kind of what they're looking at. So, you know, that's their players. But again, you know, Aiden Hutchinson's a great example. Brian Branch is a great example of a prototypical Lion. Smart, confident, lives, breathes football. Very high football IQ and high intensity player.
Yep. 100%. I wish we got some of that GPS data. That would be very helpful for us. But we are very invested in Raz over here at the Draft Countdown. so for sure, and that's good information to know. All right, so let's pivot away. You have had some takes on this quarterback class coming up. So let's put the Draft Wire hat on and not the Lions Wire hat. Correct me if I'm wrong. You're not all in on Caleb Williams, right?
I am not. I will say unequivocally, he has the highest ceiling of any quarterback in this draft, and he has a higher ceiling than any quarterback last year, too. And I really, really liked C.J. Stroud. Caleb Williams could be better than him, but my God, the margin for error with this dude and how low he can go if he doesn't quickly get rid of some seriously bad traits, it's rough. It's hard because – so I'll rewind a little bit. I covered Baker Mayfield when he came out of Oklahoma and the Lincoln Riley system and went to Cleveland, and I was there for the first couple of training camps that he was there. And him having to unlearn everything that Lincoln Riley basically taught him about how to play quarterback before he could become a good NFL player, it was stark, and it was real. I saw that with my own two eyes. Heard similar things about what's going on with Kyler in Arizona. Like, they have to unteach him so many things that Lincoln Riley has stressed to succeed in the NFL. And I look at Caleb Williams, and I don't see the work ethic that I saw in Baker or Kyler, for that matter. I don't see as much of an acknowledgement that he's flawed. I don't think he thinks that he has to do these things. And that's, you know, some of this obviously conjecture on my part, but some of it's from, like, you know, I've talked to people that, you know him, that know the USC program, and they're like, you know, he works, but his definition of what hard work is and what the NFL's definition of hard work is might not be the same, you know, and maybe he can elevate it. And if he does, he'll be fantastic. But if he doesn't learn that a five-step drop means you drop and that ball comes out every time from the same spot at the same time, he's not going to last in Chicago. That market's rough on quarterbacks. I will say that as somebody who lives within earshot of it. They are always looking for reasons to kill their quarterback in Chicago in the media. Baker Mayfield handled that very well in Cleveland. I think Kyler has done a pretty good job with that. I will say Russell Wilson, who is the player that Caleb Williams reminds me most of, did a very good job of handling that in Seattle. Although Seattle was, they're kind of sycophantic fans, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I kind of appreciate that. He's somewhere between Russell Wilson and Baker Mayfield for me. And if you put those two hands together and you get the best of Caleb Williams, he's going to be better than both those guys. But he can also, if he doesn't get better at some things quickly, getting the ball out on time, understanding that when to get out of a play, understanding that you can throw the ball away and it's not a bad thing, or take a sack and it's not a bad thing. You can keep the trains on time instead of, you know, having them crash three times and then have to, you know, make this spectacular, you know, leaping jump over a chasm. He doesn't take layups. And that's frustrating to me. And it's wild to me that Chicago is so enamored with him, because that's what they hate about Justin Fields. He can't do those things. And, like, Caleb can't do them either. Like, I don't get that one. So I like him as a player overall. He's a top 15 pick for me. But there's a lot of room for error with him. A lot of margin for boom bust with him. More than a lot of other quarterbacks, probably more than any since Josh Allen. Now, obviously, Josh Allen worked out damn good for Buffalo. So, you know, if he turns out to be that kind of guy, that's great. Chicago's been damn good for a long time. But I wouldn't be super confident about that if I were a Bears fan or a Bears employee trying to select him. I know that puts me in a minority, but
it does. And but so you're not taking Caleb Williams, and you're Chicago. Who is Jeff Risden? Who is GM Risden taking with the number one pick?
I'm taking Marvin Harrison. But I'm keeping Justin Fields. They're not doing that. So I'm clearly not it. If I'm taking a quarterback, and I have to, if I'm them, I'm taking Jaden Daniels, because I think his maturity and his growth that he's shown and his ability to handle, like, LSU is a high pressure environment. That's a professional football team that happens to be in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, playing in the SEC. But his growth, the fact that he's overcome the things that he needed to do to be as successful as to win the Heisman Trophy, the fact that he can successfully manage a highly talented group around him, I don't think that gets talked up enough about C.J. Stroud and why he was successful last year. It was because at Ohio State, he had to manage a lot of professional egos. Like, he had experience dealing with that kind of stuff before. Jaden Daniels has that. Caleb does a little bit to some extent, but I value that about Jaden. Now, the fact that he's 185-ish and has been, you know, I watched the Arizona State tape. I've seen him get hit. Like, I worry about that too. I just think that if I were trying to rebuild a franchise around any one of these quarterbacks, it would be Jaden Daniels.
I think it's fair, and I kind of think the NFL sees Daniels a lot higher than the consensus does. I think he's maybe closer to Caleb Williams than Drake May in a lot of circumstances. So I'm kind of with you on that. Let's get some more positives. One of the things I always like every time you come on the show, Jeff, is hearing about kind of your guys as you're at the Senior Bowl, you've scouted the combine, you're going through this process. And I think you always have, you're always spot on and accurate about some of your, you know, even day two, day three guys that you really like. You have such a good eye for it. So I definitely want you to give you the floor if there's any players that you've kind of fallen in love with here in this process, to wax poetic about them.
Yeah, so it's funny you say that, because I just started a draft today of, like, the My Guys column, and there were two guys that were very, like, top of mind. Chris Abrams-Drain, the cornerback from Missouri, the one that doesn't get the love that Ennis Rakestraw gets, and I don't exactly get that, but I love Chris Abrams-Drain. I wish he was 182 pounds, but he's not. But I love, again, small cornerback who plays bigger than he is. You know, a lot of bark and a lot of bite. Yeah, sign me up for that guy. And then the other one is Christian Mahogany, the ass kicker from Boston College. To call him a guard just doesn't do him justice. He's a snowplow with fangs. He's got some flaws to his game. Like, I'm not delusional. He's not the number one guard in this draft. There's a lot of really good guards in this draft. I just love the way that he's just going to bury you and be happy about it. There's just something primal about that. You know, I'm a big Wyatt Teller fan with the Cleveland Browns. I just love watching that guy. Like, he's just going to go and, like, destroy you. And there's, I don't know. It's, I like that.
All right. I always love talking about the Mac with you too, because you're an OU guy, and he's not an OU guy, but you have to beam a little bit when one of the top, if not the top cornerback and one of the top prospects in this draft class is a Toledo Mac guy and Quinyon Mitchell. Now, my man up there, Shane, he's been on top of this. He's been driving this Quinyon Mitchell train since about week one. But how much do you like the fact that a Mac guy is probably going to be the top corner in this class?
I love it. I will say he didn't face a single future NFL receiver in the Mac at any point in his career. So that's a little concerning. Like, I'm a Mac lover, but I'm not a Mac delusional Kool-Aid drinker. Sam Wiglish might be the best wide receiver that he faced, and God bless Sam. You know, he did great things for you, but I don't think he's making the NFL. But the athletic testing, the attitude. So we interviewed him down in Mobile at the Senior Bowl, and I was wearing an Ohio U hat. And as he comes up to me, and I introduce myself, like, "Hi, I'm Jeff." And he's like, "You go to OU?" I'm like, "Yeah, I did." He's like, "Sorry about kicking y'all's ass." I'm like, that's just, like, I want that. Like, he was nice about it, but he meant it too. Like, yeah, we got you. Like, I'm looking down on you because you went there. I'm like, that's the mentality you want in a corner. Like, he wants to beat you. I like that. So I'm very gung-ho on him. It wouldn't shock me if he's the first defensive player taken I think Dallas Turner will probably get that nod, but I don't know, man. Quinion is really good. And the player I compare him to is Darius Slay, who I covered for a long time in Detroit, who I loved coming out of Mississippi State. And Darius, and I think this might actually be true with Quinion too. Now, Darius was a second-round pick. I think Quinion might struggle a little bit early on in his NFL career just because he hasn't faced that level of competition and, like, the consistency of the speed and size and accuracy of the quarterbacks that are being and receivers that are going to be coming at him. It's going to take him a little bit of an adjustment period. It did that for Darius Slay. But then after about 12 games of the rookie year, you had a perennial Pro Bowl player that you could rely on consistently. And I think that's what Quinion's going to be. So I love the fact that he's getting all the hype. He deserves it.
Yeah, I love him. I think he's been rock solid. I agree with you. It might be a little struggle early, but hopefully, you know, if you have a good defensive coordinator, good secondary coaching camp, hopefully can get the most out of him. Stake your claim, Jeff. Who are the Lions taking in round one this year? Give me your prediction. Free agency isn't even over yet, but you know, I got to put you on the spot. And because if you nail it, we get to clip it forever. So
well, let's see. So they're picking 29. First off, I don't think they're married to picking 29, so that makes it a little tough. It's a lot easier when it was between like Aiden Hutchinson and Kayvon Thibodeau, like no one or two. Like which one are they taking? Like that one was pretty easy. We kind of knew that they liked Hutchinson, the hometown guy. They need, in some particular order, after the first days of free agency, they still need a starting offensive guard because they still only have one. Jonah Jackson's gone. They need a defensive tackle, but I don't think they value defensive tackle there. I would love Johnny Newton out of Illinois. He would be another one that I would throw in the my guys list, as would be his teammate, offensive lineman Isaiah Adams. And I do think that the Lions will be drafting him later, like fourth, fifth round, because they also need depth on the interior and exterior. There's a guy you can draft, and he can play every position for you but center. And you get him in the fourth, fifth round. That's great value. If you don't have to start him, that's great. They do still need a I'm not sure that they see a guy like Darius Robinson as that valuable to take him at 29, but he's certainly in play. But my personal pick, I would pick Cooper Beebe. I don't think they're going to take him there. Oh boy. Before Georgia's pro day today, I thought Kamari Lassiter might be a pretty good one, but when you run 4.64, and again,
is that what you're hearing? Because I saw conflicting, I saw some with a 4.51, 4.52, and I saw Brugler saying 4.61. So I'm curious to see where that actually comes out.
Yeah, I am too. And I've been out of the pocket, so I haven't been able to keep up with that. But I do know that Georgia does do the chip thing in their shoulder pads. So there is GPS timing out there somewhere. Hopefully any of us can get it. And if I get it, I'll share it with you. If you guys get it, you can share it with me. That'd be great. I don't know if he's going to be it. So I'm going to go Darius Robinson. Darius Robinson probably makes the most sense. He's a Detroit guy. He is a versatile defensive lineman, which they covet. He can take over that role for Josh Pascal and Romeo Okwara, who's kind of filled in that role. I don't know. He doesn't excite me as much as I'd want to, and maybe that'll be why they take him, because I wasn't super excited about Jack Campbell. He was my number like 35 player, and they took him 18. Still playing out. So far, so good. They nailed Brian Branch. They nailed Sam Laporta. They got my guy Hendon Hooker in the third last year. I'm pretty happy about that. They are too. So yeah, I'm thinking Darius Robinson is probably my early bet right now for who they would take it at 29. But I'm not married to them staying at 29. I don't think they are. Which way do they go? I don't know, man. I wish I did.
Hey, man, they've taken some big swings up before. Maybe they take a big swing up for Jackson Powers Johnson.
Oh, that would be fantastic. I would be unable to wear pants for a certain amount of time.
Well, on that note, Jeff, On that note, Jeff, we'll let you get out of here and go think about that for a little while. Maybe take a cold shower.
I might need it.
Jeff, man, we love your work at DraftWire. We love your work at Lions Wire, and I love listening to you and Chris on the Detroit Lions podcast. The Lions aren't my team, but I still, y'all are very informative about everything. So I like to listen in to you guys as well.
Appreciate that.
I didn't tell everybody. I told everybody where they can find you, but I'll let you do that as well.
Yeah, you can find me at DraftWire. It's on my name under there, at USA Today, Wire Sites. I also run Lions Wire, the Detroit Lions podcast. Look it up on YouTube. We have episodes coming fairly frequently. Actually, we are normally recording at this time right now, but logistically, it didn't work this week. So we're recording on Saturday. So tune in, and it's fun. We have a lot of fun with it. And we get some good guests on there, too. So maybe we'll even get you guys to come on. Brian, I think you've been on, haven't you?
I have not, but I would love to.
We got to get that. You guys are smart. We like smart people, and you guys are smart. We got to get you to come on. So,
we appreciate that.
I will bid you guys adieu. Thanks so much for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it.
Jeff, thanks, Jeff. Man. It was awesome, man. Appreciate it.
All right, that was Jeff Risden. He's great. He's one of the best in the business, and we always like having him on. We've had him on every year leading up to the draft now since we started this podcast, and just always a fantastic guest to bring on. Follow him on Twitter at Jeff Risden, just his name, at Jeff Risden. And get those takes.
Yeah, he's smart. He's funny. He's entertaining. He knows his stuff. Like, Jeff's just the perfect draft Nick out there. So,
yep. So, might be the first time I've ever had him on and not talked about Smoothie King. Maybe.
I think it might be actually.
So, let's quickly get through these other three trades that we didn't talk about. The two of them went down today. Baltimore moves offensive tackle Morgan Moses and a 2024 fourth round pick to the Jets. Baltimore gets their 2024 fourth round pick and a sixth. So they do a pick swap in the fourth. Baltimore gets a sixth for Morgan Moses.
I love this for the Jets. I mean, we knew how big the offensive tackle need was. I like getting Morgan Moses. I mean, he's not, you know, still playing like he used to. It's been a decade in the league, but it's a good starter for them at right tackle.
Houston traded defensive lineman Malik Collins to San Francisco for a 2024 seventh today. That feels like a salary dump more than anything. And the Bengals were going to – they signed Zach Moss, which we'll talk about in a little bit, just a second. But immediately after it was announced they were going to release Joe Mixon, well, they pulled him back, traded him to the Texans. We still haven't quite got the compensation on that. It's the report is a conditional seventh round pick, which lends me to believe that it's a 2025 pick and not a 24 pick.
Right. I mean, look, they're going to cut him anyway. So whatever you get, even if it's nothing, it's fine. Then the Texans don't have to compete. I don't love the fit for the Texans. I don't think Joe Mixon is a big zone blocking one cut, like great vision running back. I don't think that's a great fit, but he's better than Damian Pierce as a fit. And ultimately, I think the Texans still draft someone and have kind of a 1-2 punch there.
Yeah. All right. So we talked about free agency and the impact it's going to have on the 2024 NFL draft. Big money getting thrown out everywhere. I'm not going to talk about every single player that was signed, but just kind of those I think that's going to affect draft position and while I'm say or draft capital, I should say. And so Shane, correct me if I'm wrong. And I think this is how people should view these signings and how it will affect the draft. If it's anything of a 2-year deal or less, a team can still draft anything they want, right? You're kind of with me on that.
And I think a lot of times when you see a 1-year deal, 2-year deal, it tells you that's a position they're looking at in the draft. Yeah. I almost am like, oh, I need to include that early in the draft.
Like in the first 2 days. They're targeting that spot in the first couple of days. Anything where they commit to 3 years or more, that's probably off the table until day three, where you're just drafting depth guys. They're not looking to add a starter at that position early in the upcoming draft, in my opinion. But a 1 or 2 year steal, team could steal. If the right player falls,
right,
I should say that. I look at it like this. You're not hamstrung into having to draft that need. But if the right player falls to your spot, then you can still take that player and you're contractually not screwed.
Exactly. I think it's okay. If there is not a player there, if there's a run, we don't draft someone. Like you said, we don't want to be screwed. So we're going to sign some depth pieces, guys that maybe could start, but might not. So I think it is worth looking at free agency and not crossing things off the team need list, but shifting around if it is, like you said, Brian, some of those smaller deals.
Yeah. So like the top name on my board here, Houston, they lost Jonathan Grenard. He signed a big deal with Minnesota. So they replace him as a pass rusher with Minnesota, ironically, Danielle Hunter. So they basically just swapped guys here. But pairing Danielle Hunter with Will Anderson Jr. feels very good for the Texans here. They're probably not drafting an edge guy in the first round.
Right. Danielle Hunter's a big enough name. I mean, you have to love what the Texans are doing, right? I mean, after you nailed the quarterback last year and you nailed the pass rusher, you made the playoffs, and now they have the money. They're signing Danielle Hunter. You're working on that rookie Stroud deal. Like, this is our window. Yep.
This is what good teams do. They hit. Seattle famously did this when they hit with Russell Wilson as a rookie, and they took advantage of that cheap quarterback contract and built their defense and everything. And they made a Super Bowl run. Whereas that's kind of what Houston can do now with C.J. Stroud: build the pieces around him. They probably still need to add a wide receiver at some point, but that's neither here nor there. I don't know how this affects New England's thought process, if it's a quarterback or not, but they re-signed Michael Onwenu as their right tackle. Does this take them out of offensive tackle in round one if it wasn't going to be a quarterback?
Yeah, I think it does. I think it puts you in a quarterback or wide receiver in round one at that spot for the Patriots. You know, they certainly can still draft a tackle in this draft, but that's I'm with you.
Does Jacksonville signing Gabe Davis, the receiver from Buffalo, take them out of wide receiver at 17?
I think so. Like, it's not a huge deal, but I think it fills a role, right? It fills that deep role. So I think for Jacksonville, you have Christian Kirk, you have Zay Jones, you have Gabe Davis, and Parker Washington came on. I think it probably takes them out of round one, maybe round two if the right guy's there. Round two, round three, they could take one.
I do love how they tried to put the screws to Atlanta and didn't extend Ridley's contract before the deadline date, and then he signs with Tennessee today. But by virtue of that, Atlanta gets Jacksonville's third from that trade for Calvin Ridley. Jacksonville keeps their second, but they lose Calvin Ridley to, and it was a massive contract for him. Maybe they shouldn't have went that high, but that's it is what it is. But now they pair him with DeAndre Hopkins. They give him building talent around Will Levis. We'll see if that works out for him.
Will Levis or Mason Rudolph, who they signed today. So, you know. Brian Callahan, baby.
I love Brian Callahan, but come on, man. But no, so I think we can cross wide receiver off Tennessee at 7 now for sure.
Yes.
That has offensive tackle written all over it, baby.
Yeah, it's coming. I think they're going to get the best one there. Though, you know, we'll see for Treylon Burks, you know, sticks around, and they could look at receiver later in the draft.
Commanders signing Dorrance Armstrong, the defensive end from Dallas. Does that take them away at the top of the second round from the edge rusher market?
I think it makes it less likely. You know, I think there's still a possibility, but they've signed here a couple guys, edge rushers. None are like great. So I don't think it's 0% chance. Armstrong is going to be the primary pass rusher there. I think it allows them to work on that offense a little bit more.
Carolina Panthers, we talked about earlier, now have two picks at the top of the second round. I don't think one of those two picks is going on the interior offensive line. They paid Robert Hunt $100 million to play guard. They signed another guard, too, I believe.
Damian Lewis.
I didn't write that one down. So I don't feel like they're going to the interior of the offensive line there at picks 33 or 39.
No. I think we're going to see – I think receivers still on the board for them. I think running backs on the board for them, some of the defensive positions. But offensive line, I think as a whole, offensive line is pretty good for the Panthers at this point.
Panthers probably need to come away with two wide receivers in this class at some point, and one of them probably has to come at 33 or 39.
I think so. I mean, Adam Thielen's getting old. This is not the regime that picked Jonathan Mingo. I don't think he's a good fit anymore. So, yeah, I feel like they're going to take at least one there.
I'm just trying to comb through this list. Philadelphia signing Bryce Huff. That is undersized pass rusher from the Jets there. Had a big year. I don't know if this is an overpay or not. We've been mocking defensive tackles to the Raiders for about 2-3 years now. I guess we can stop that now. They've spent the big dollars on Christian Wilkins.
Yeah, I mean, everyone was going after Christian Wilkins, and rightfully so. Such a good run stuffer with that pass rush ability and size. Raiders get him. I mean, him and Max Crosby together, that's pretty dangerous. But I think the back half of that defense now needs a lot of work to make it work.
Yeah, another interior offensive lineman signing for big bucks was Jonah Jackson. Jeff talked about him a little bit earlier. He signs big dollars with the Rams. Packers have made some good moves, right? We're going to talk more about the running back move they made here in a minute. We're going to go into more details with the quarterbacks and running backs, if nothing else, to placate the fantasy folk that watch this program. But what about Xavier McKinney? Big say. Fine safety going over from the Giants to the Packers.
Yeah, I mean, the Packers really needed two safeties this offseason, so that fills one of those big holes. I think McKinney's played very solidly for the Giants, great fit for the Packers. But I would still – I think we still could see an early safety for the Packers, you know, day two, maybe early day three.
Arizona signs former Bengals offensive tackle Jonah Williams today. I don't know. Is Paris Johnson moving over to the left side? They released DJ Humphreys right before the announcement was made of Jonah Williams signing. So is Paris Johnson going over to the left side and Jonah coming in at right, or is Jonah going to left?
And Paris, you know, Johnson that you know what that answer is, Brian. You know,
but exactly. I was told Jonah Williams wanted to be a left tackle. That was
He's got to play left tackle. I mean, that's the answer.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I don't think he signs there unless he's playing left tackle.
So. Good luck with that. Speaking of the Bengals, while I meant to ask Jeff about DJ Reader, while we had him here, we got to talk about a lot of other stuff. He is visiting, or allegedly going to visit, the Lions tomorrow, where he will probably sign if they get him in the building. That'll be a big loss for the Bengals, but they signed a great pass rushing defensive tackle. And Sheldon Rankins comes over from the Texans. Rankins had 3 sacks against the Bengals in their game last year. I guess they're like, we need to go out and get him.
Yeah, I think it's a great signing for the Bengals. A huge need, as you've talked about on the show before. So definitely fills that. We'll see. We'll see what happens from here. But you think, if assuming they don't sign Reader, you think defensive tackle still on the board for the Bengals pretty early?
I think so, but their lack of involvement in the offensive tackle market so far as well lends me to believe that we can almost write down an offensive tackle and pin at this point in all corresponding Bengals mock drafts going forward.
Yeah, like round one or
– like round one at 18. Right. I think at 18, but I do think the depth – and that's another story for another day – but I do think the depth of this class would allow them to get a starting capable right tackle at 49. I don't think that the fan base or the Bengals front office is going to see it that way.
Well, like, you don't need Brock Bowers anymore since you got Mike Gesicki, so you're in good shape.
They still need Brock Bowers. Everybody needs Brock Bowers.
Hey, look, Arthur Smith was talking to him today at the Pro Bowl. You know how good he is at using tight ends, so maybe.
Well, RIP Brock Bowers fantasy value if he gets drafted by Pittsburgh. So, anyway, wide receiver cap casualty to talk about today. The Chargers had to get under the cap somehow, and Mike Williams was the one that had to take the knife in the back today, gets cut. He should have no shortage of suitors, right?
No, we're seeing these contracts that these receivers are getting. You mentioned Calvin Ridley, so I was like, geez, you know, Mike Williams should get a pretty decent contract despite his injury history. I think he'll have some. We'll see if the Raiders, you know, they're under the cap, but might need to slice into the Chargers, excuse me.
One wide receiver who's not going to get a big contract that these other guys are getting is Cincinnati's T. Higgins. Despite all of said speculation on the internet, T. Higgins will be playing for the Bengals this year for $21 million.
And
I'm going to go out on a limb and say I think there's about a 65 to 70% chance T. Higgins is playing for the Bengals in 2025 on a $26 million contract.
Oh, geez, that – I mean, if he has requested a trade, I think it's going to be hard to do it 2 years in a row.
We'll see. We'll see. All right. Let's talk about this quarterbacks and running backs. I didn't even write down the ones that happened today. I don't know that any running backs really moved around today, but we had some quarterback movement today with Flacco signing as a backup with the Colts. And you mentioned Mason Rudolph, tongue-in-cheek, signing with the Titans. So we'll talk about the quarterbacks. We'll start in your backyard there. Russell Wilson is on a one-year vet men deal. Everybody, he's the presumptive starting quarterback for Pittsburgh. Now, I don't know on the one-year veteran minimum deal if this isn't a competition.
It's not, right? So the reason he signed a one-year vet minimum deal was because of offset language in the Denver Broncos contract. He was getting the $36 million this year, no matter what. Whatever Pittsburgh paid him would cut – basically, Pittsburgh would pay Denver. Pittsburgh's paying Denver the $1 million. That's how it works. So he was always going to sign a vet minimum deal no matter where he went because he's making the same amount either way. So it just helps the team that he's on. So, you know, in that case, the contract isn't an indication. I think you'll hear it's a competition. I think for him to sign so quickly in Pittsburgh, he was told it's not a competition. And I think ultimately Russell Wilson will start week one pretty easily.
Before we get to the big quarterback, Jameis Winston's going to get paid $8 million to back up Deshaun Watson in Cleveland. Jacoby Brissett signed to probably be a bridge in New England to either Jaden Daniels or Drake May, or God forbid, JJ McCarthy. At this point, Gardner Minshew, he signed what I think is a starter money with the Raiders. They're saying he's competing with Aiden O'Connell, but I don't know, $15 million seems like they're bringing him in to start.
I mean, I think it's the idea. It was a lot more than I thought he would get, but, you know, they could let Aiden O'Connell kind of compete, but I think Minshew starts. Maybe they draft someone still. They could draft a McCarthy or a round two, draft a Bo Nix or Michael Penix, whatever. I think that's still on the table for the Raiders.
I do as well. And finally, the big fish was Kirk Cousins. So it was $180 million with Atlanta. So they're definitely not in the quarterback market there in the first round anymore. But why is Mike McCartney his agent? That guy is just amazing at what he does.
Look, I think Kirk Cousins is amazing at what he does. I think he's been one of the most underrated quarterbacks in the NFL for a decade. Like, he's worth his money. He is, if he's healthy, he's a top 10 quarterback in the league. Like, he's good. And the Vikings have had a really, really bad defense and a lot of injuries for a number of years. I think this is a great signing because Atlanta has a team that's ready to compete, right? I mean, they should be the favorite in the division. I think they are right now. This offense has weapons. They sign another one we'll get to. The defense has added some. They're going to add more in the draft. I don't know. I think Atlanta's, dare I say, if Kirk Cousins is healthy, one of the top five teams in the NFC. I mean, they got to be up there.
I mean, they've got Bijan, Drake London, Kyle Pitts maybe finally comes off the shelf here.
Did you hear the story about the number today?
I did not.
So Kyle Pitts has number 8, right, which is
yes.
Cousins' number. So Kirk called him and said, you know, look, like, I don't want to take it from you. If you really want it, I'll write a check to charity, whatever. And Kyle Pitts says, the only thing I want is targets.
That's fair.
So that's pretty good.
Bubba chiming in here. Fan base in Atlanta is, let's say, split on this Cousins move.
Look, I think it's a lot of money. You know, in a couple years, no matter what, it's not going to be great. But I'd rather this than Desmond Ridder and Taylor Heineke and whatever else you would toss out there, Mason Rudolph. Like, what else are we going to do? This was, I think, the right move.
Let me ask you this, because one quarterback we haven't talked about changing hands. And at this point, I don't know where he ends up. It's Justin Fields. Where is the market for Justin Fields at this point on a trade? And is it to be a starter or compete for to be a starter somewhere?
I think the Bears botched this. I mean, I think Ryan Poles botched this, right? I think you needed to move him before free agency, even if you were taking a little bit less, because now – is anyone paying more than a 5th-round pick? Honestly, why? Why would you? I mean, they're the Bears, the ones over the barrel. So I still think there are places. I still think there are situations where, you know, like the Raiders, where okay, you could trade him and he's going to compete maybe to be a starter. But I don't think there's a guaranteed spot. With Luke
Getsy as the OC in Vegas, I cannot see that.
See it. So Denver, I mean, is Denver – I don't know if Sean Payton exactly feels like a good
– I saw someone today mention Seattle.
Yeah.
And that one actually might make sense. At this point, if you're the Bears, are you almost better off just keeping him and then seeing what happens during training camp?
You know, I think you could have, but I think you also kind of botched that, right? When you were basically saying, hey, we're going to trade him. And if you can't, oh, now we're going to keep him. But he's, you know, going to be the backup to Caleb Williams. Like, ugh, that's just an icky locker room move to begin with, too. And, you know, and they signed Brett Ripien to be the number 3 quarterback or maybe number 2. Ultimately, Fields gets moved. So, yeah, I mean, I think they botched it. And it sucks for Fields because I think he deserves a shot to start somewhere. And now the spots are very, very, very limited.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't know where that spot is. Like I said, at this point, see, I thought maybe even Indianapolis before they signed Flacco today, I thought maybe a late-round pick or something goes there to back up Anthony Richardson. I don't know. Seattle feels like the best case scenario for Justin Fields at this point.
Yeah. And even then it's, you know, how's that fit with Ryan Grubbs? It's going to be tough. I think he'll get moved. I think it's going to be during the draft. I think it'll be whatever team misses out basically on the quarterbacks. Right. And like, okay, we got to go to option F, yep. G, H and trade for Justin Fields.
All right. Who was the other skill player Atlanta signed that you?
Darnell Mooney. They signed a pretty big money receiver.
Well, I did not write that down on my other list there. Sorry. So yeah, you're right. That's a good call. He'll be their number 2 receiver going into this year. Yep.
Good pickup there.
Let's talk about these running backs, Shane, because this is definitely fantasy-rific for you and your big community there. I guess the most fun signing here or. Is Derrick Henry in Baltimore?
I mean, it's exciting because, you know, he's going to get touchdown opportunities with Lamar Jackson there running the ball and that good offense. He fits the offense. Yeah, it's fun. I still think they could draft someone and compete a little bit, but, you know, we'll see.
Which is more fantasy relevant,
here, Josh Jacobs in Green Bay or Saquon Barkley in Philadelphia?
I think Saquon is fun just for the talent and that offense. You know, maybe Jalen Hurts has a little less rushing touchdowns next year when he can just hand it off to Saquon Barkley.
But do you like Jacobs in Green Bay?
I do. I think more than people think. Jacobs, he's a three down back like Aaron Jones wasn't. And Aaron Jones is great at what he does. I think he'll be good for Minnesota. But I like Josh Jacobs. He's younger. He can catch the football. You can leave him on the field. I think he's going to do really well in Green Bay.
A.J. Dillon's also on the way out, right? He hasn't signed anywhere yet, but
he will probably in the next couple days. Right. Tony Pollard leaving Dallas, going to Tennessee. He'll split carries with Tajay Spears, their draft pick last year.
Yeah, I think a lot of people thought Tajay Spears might just become the starter, and it's going to be one of those type of splits that I don't think will be fun fantasy-wise for either one of those guys.
Probably not. Austin Eckler to the Commanders.
Yikes. I mean, he's not the starter. Like, I still think Brian Robinson, you know, you obviously have you have Cliff Kingsbury there. I think Robinson still fits really well. Robinson even caught the ball really well last year. So Eckler playing the Antonio Gibson role.
Who signed with New England, right?
Right. Classic New England.
Yeah. All right. And unless I can't think of another one that may have moved on here, Zach Moss to the Bengals. 2-year, $8 million deal. I expect the split with Moss and Chase Brown will be closer than what the split was last year with Mixon and Chase Brown.
Right. I think Chase Brown was emerging. Moss gives you that between the tackles guy, Brown a little more dynamic ability. Do you think this takes the Bengals out of drafting a running back in the draft?
I think it takes them out of a running back in the first 2 days.
Okay.
I think they'll come back they've got, what, two six round picks. I wouldn't be surprised if one of those was a running back. They also brought back Travion Williams on a 1-year deal. So he's going to be that de facto third running back unless a draft pick emerges. And he's also one of their core special teams guys. So that's kind of more with Travion Williams there. But so Zach Moss, I'm a little excited about that. He had some big plays last year for the Colts.
Yeah, we'll see. I think you could have done better.
Yeah. As a guy who's on team, don't pay running backs ever, this doesn't hurt my feelings.
Well, yes, it's fair.
All right, so let's move on to answering some questions. I said we got a couple on the Discord. We had a couple on Twitter. One came in March 8th, so this goes back to last week, from Obi-Wan Jacoby. That's a great, great Twitter handle, if we're going to be honest. Ask, as someone who detests hot names in a hot industry, how far is the third-tier quarterbacks from the top names? Signed, a Patriots fan who wants to trade back and take a tackle.
I guess it depends what do you think he means by third tier. I guess ultimately is, are we talking,
I'm guessing the top tier is your top four, right? And then your next tier is your Penix,
Knicks,
and then I think Rattler, or is Rattler at the bottom of tier two?
Yeah, I mean, look, you and I would probably disagree, right? I think probably Rattler Pratt is tier three to me.
I don't think there's a great chasm between Rattler and Pratt to Nix and Penix as much as it is from Nix and Penix to the Mays and Daniels.
Yeah, take the quarterback at three, Patriots fan. You're in a position, you have a top three pick, and there's actually three quarterbacks worth taking. That's not going to happen again.
I'm also not buying the slander to Drake May here recently either. This feels like draft smoke.
We'll see. I mean, I don't think he's going to like fall, but I do think he's probably the clear QB3 at this point.
I mean, it certainly seems that way, but the slander's gotten a bit ridiculous.
Yeah, that's fair. I think there's been some pushback. It'll continue. You know, he's just a little more raw than the other two, and that's fine.
At Draft Examiner sent a question, and I guess this is in reference to your mock draft. Seven rounder, by the way. Go to draftcountdown.com. Check that out. Shane dropped that big bad baby on us on Monday. What makes you think Commanders are going Daniels over May?
I think the NFL likes Daniels more than May. Like I said, I think May is a little more raw. Daniels gives you that rushing upside. And the other thing is, you know, Daniels was good as a freshman. I mean, people think, oh, he's older. He emerged at the end. He's a late bloomer. But, like, Daniels was legitimately top of this quarterback class after this class's first year, you know, his first year, and just didn't work out in Arizona State, became a cluster of a lot of things. So, but, you know, like Jeff was saying, you know, Daniels really raised – had to navigate a lot of the high-profile guys on that LSU offense to try to win games. So to me, you know, I think either one would fit Cliff Kingsbury's offense, but I think Daniels is just going to be thought of as, hey, this is a guy that could be one of the best quarterbacks in the league, whereas may have a higher floor but a lower ceiling.
Makes sense to me. All right, let's move on to the Discord questions, and we got a couple from Sam and one from Bubba. Let's go. Sam asks, are there any prospects that played corner that are still getting talked about as corners, but you think project better to safety?
Interesting. So players at corner that maybe could project to safety. I think a lot we've moved over there. I'd say one is Renardo Green from Florida State, who's getting a lot of buzz, potentially top 100 buzz, had a really good combine, tough, physical. Like, I think he could be a free safety type who plays a little bit of that, you know, that center field. That's the first name that comes to mind for me. I don't know if you have others.
Depending on how official that 40 time is, Kamari Lassiter might be making that up.
Yeah, at least go into the slot, you know, slide them right in there.
Just looking, because I think we had him as listed as a safety on our board before the season. Then moved him to corner. Nehemiah Pritchett from Auburn is one. Marcellus Dial from South Carolina, who had a really good combine, is another that I think could play that nickel, maybe free safety role. At the next level, but those are, I think, day three guys more than anything here at this point.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's see, Sam's other question. It's draft day. The team ahead of you drafts Marshawn Nealon. Who is your best budget alternative, and why is it Washington? Marshawn Nealon, by the way, three tech from Western Michigan. And why is it Brennan Jackson, the edge from Washington State?
I mean, look, very specific. Brennan Jackson is good, and I think definitely could fill a similar role. Obviously, like Nealand, a lot more. I mean, I think probably for me is, I guess, Brandon Dorlus is probably next up on my list of that player who, you know, kind of edge, bigger edge, who could play a little bit of three tech. I think you can move inside and bulk him up. But that's what I think Nealand's going to be. Well liked, and maybe even goes, you know, day two. I think he probably does at this point because he is a little bit unique in that way.
I think maybe later on in the draft, maybe not in that fourth round area, but if you're looking into the fifth, sixth, seventh, maybe Gabe Hall, Baylor, kind of in that mix to me. And well, size wise, Zion Logue from Georgia is another, I think, fits that kind of profile because you know, Georgia defensive linemen, generally speaking, pretty versatile. Up and down that line, guys. So I think those are a couple to look out for there, Sam. Last question of the night. After this offseason, is this finally the year Atlanta goes with a boring player in the first round? They've needed pass rush help for a few decades now, but yet he said Twitter fans still want a wide receiver at 8.
Yeah, I don't think after the Mooney signing, Atlanta's taking a wide receiver at 8. I mean, they probably will at some point. Not at 8. I mean, I think you get a boring pick here for the Falcons. I think you get your edge rusher, you get your offensive lineman, you know, maybe you get a corner. I think that's where they're going to look at this point. They made the splash with Cousins. I think the offensive skill guys are well set. Yep. If that's what you want as a Falcons fan, I think you're going to get it and look at receiver in round four.
Forward for my three-round mock draft I'm putting out Monday. Atlanta drafts Quinyon Mitchell, cornerback, Toledo, eighth overall pick of the draft. Spoiler alert for that, for the mock there. How about that, Bubba? You're gonna get to Quinyon Mitchell in my mock on Monday.
That's fair. I think it's a real possibility. Like him and Dallas Turner probably are the favorites right now.
Yeah. I would agree. So that's going to do it for tonight's edition of the Draft Countdown podcast. Final thoughts this week, Shane, on everything we talked about tonight with Jeff, free agency as a whole, and your 7-round mock draft that you dropped on Monday.
Yeah, I mean, check out the 7-round mock draft. I've been trying to input the trades to and fill some of those picks in if I can. So check that out. It's up on Draft Countdown. And I'm excited for free agency to trickle to the end here. Pro days. You know, we'll be talking about in the next couple pods. I think that's where some of the excitement comes as we move to the pro day circuit.
Yeah, we'll have a pro day segment in the next over the next couple of weeks as we start getting official numbers in. I'm not rushing out until I see the U come off the RAS card. I'm not apt to talk about some of these pro days yet, but we should start getting official numbers in. Maybe we'll have Kamari Lassiter's official 40 time before next Wednesday's show, and we can rule judgment on him whether or not he's headed to day three.
Yeah.
Because 4.61.
Hopefully we can figure it out. I'm scared we'll never know what the real time was.
We may not.
4.5 or 4.6.
But that's going to do it for tonight's edition of the Draft Countdown podcast. Again, thanks, Jeff, for coming on the show. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Record number of live views tonight on the for the podcast, so I love it. And if you're new to the channel here on YouTube, hit that subscribe button, hit the notification bell to get notified each and every week when we go live. If you're listening to this on the audio platform, be it Spotify or Apple Podcasts, leave us 5-star review, share that out as well. Follow us on Twitter follow me on Twitter at Deep Fried Draft. Follow Shane on Twitter at Shane P. Hallam. Follow Draft Countdown on Twitter at Draft Countdown. And for all of your NFL draft needs, go to draftcountdown.com. For Shane, I'm Brian. Good night, everybody.